This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
And we need peace in South Sudan. The whole country collapsed. People are suffering in South Sudan, and we need to stop that. We need peace right now.
That's a protester here in Washington calling for peace in South Sudan. Details coming up.
Also, a court in Somaliland has sentenced a poet to 3 years in prison after charging her with insulting and defaming the state. And fighting terrorism is high on the agenda for the African Land Forces Summit, which begins today.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, Ethiopia has been engulfed in unprecedented levels of political unrest over the past 3 years. Now, a young Ethiopian technocrat, widely seen as a reformer, has been selected as prime minister. To brief us on the matter, we have in studio Tigist Gomme from VOA's Horn of Africa service. Welcome, Tigist.
Thank you for having me.
So how is Abiy Ahmed, the new prime minister of Ethiopia, doing so far?
The new prime minister took office on April 2nd, and this past 2 weeks have been a very busy week for him. He have did several speeches to the public, unusually, which a lot of officials previously didn't do much. Usually the officials address the people through medias and all that, but he chose to travel to different regions and speak to the people directly. And his first stop was in eastern part of the country, in Somali region, the capital, Jijiga. And he met with the people and he promised to end the border issue between the biggest regions in the country, Oromia region and Somali region. And this border issue have been risen for loss of many lives, and also over a million people were displaced. And he promised to work with the regional governments to solve that problem. And he is really welcomed in a very unprecedented manner. And his next stop was in Oromia region, Ambo town, which is about 120-something kilometers from the capital, Addis. And that is historical in many sense. First of all, he comes from that region, Oromia region. He speaks the language, that's his native language, and he spoke in his native language, Afan Oromo, to the people. Thousands have showed up at the Ambo Stadium and cheered him throughout his speech. And that makes him probably the first Ethiopian prime minister to address the public in his native language. And Ambo is known for anti-government protests for many, many years. We can say since this government took office in 1992, especially the past 3 years also, there was a big resistance and they paid a lot for this struggle. And we've been talking from our service, Horn of Africa service. We spoke to a few residents and how they feel about the new prime minister, and they say they hope for change, they hope for bright future for them and also for the country in general, but they remain skeptical. And their main fear is, even though on top level there is a new prime minister and new hope coming, but they still feel the structure on local level is still the same people are in that. So they remain skeptical.
So he is traveling all over and good reception. But let me ask you, Tigis, the state of emergency declared in Ethiopia in February after the shocking resignation of Ahmed's predecessor, Haile Mariam Desalegn, is still in place. Military officers are actually running the country as long as the state of emergency is in play. So as a result, some critics are saying the new prime minister's hold on state security is minimal, making it extremely hard for him to move forward with any reform agenda. So how do we reconcile the situation?
Right. The state of emergency was declared for a second round again in mid-February, as you said, right after the next day after the previous prime minister resigned. And after Dr. Abiy Ahmed, the new prime minister, took office, people are longing for him to speak about that Yesterday, he spoke at Millennium Hall in Addis, and 25,000 people showed up waiting for him to mention this, but he refrained from talking about the state of emergency. That's why his critics are saying he still don't have that power to do what he's promising to do. But his supporters have some things to say. There are some tangible things they claim he have gone so far. He have signed the order to close the notorious prison in Addis Makalawi. It was shut down just last week. That's one. The other thing is internet service have been blocked in Oromia since December. And just last week again, internet is back. Even though the command post is in charge of the country, it seems like there are some things we're seeing. And just today, before I came to the studio, high-ranking officials from Oromia who were arrested during this state of emergency are released. The one is Oromia Region Justice Bureau Head Tayyid Nda. Another one is university professor and blogger, you might know about him, Siyum Tashome. So these are good starts.
Work in progress.
Yeah.
Tigist Gemme, VOA Horn of Africa's reporter. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
A demonstration by primarily American South Sudanese is happening today outside the White House to draw attention to the violence in South Sudan. South Sudan In Focus reporter Ayan Buer was there and spoke with some of the demonstrators about why they came to Washington to express their grievances in front of the White House.
It's a cold and wet morning here in Washington, D.C., and I'm in front of the White House, where about 17 South Sudanese political activists have gathered to make demands to U.S. President Donald Trump. And Toot Tell from Tennessee tells me they ultimately want peace in South Sudan.
Yeah, actually, we came to Washington, D.C. to protest and ask the support of President Trump. If President Trump can act and help us to overcome the problem of South Sudan. And we need peace in South Sudan. The whole country collapsed. People are suffering in South Sudan, and we need to stop that. We need peace right now.
Isaac Gung is the representative of the SPLMIO here in the United States of America. He came all the way from Texas to take part of this rally. Isaac, tell me, how is the Trump administration doing in their response plan for South Sudan?
Well, again, my assessment for this administration is that it is doing better than the previous one. We feel that the previous administration was caught off guard as far as the complexity of the South Sudanese conflict. This administration has seen some of the issues that prevented peace from being realized, and it has taken concrete steps.
But clearly, the Trump administration is not doing enough, or else you wouldn't be here in front of the White House today.
Correct. You know, we think that it has taken some good steps, but they can do more.
Like, what can they do more of?
Right now, we have, all of the parties in Addis to negotiate a peace settlement. But as you know, again, the previous one had the government refusing to sign the key part of it, which is the Declaration of Principles. So these South Sudanese that are here today want to send the message that if a peace is going to be realized, the Trump administration needs to take additional steps, especially to encourage the people to be faithful in their negotiations.
Michael is here all the way from Nebraska. He has a sign up that says President Trump will make South Sudan great again. Tell me more about that, Michael.
Yes, the reason I hold this sign is the step that President Trump takes. Sanction is one of the greatest things that will bring peace in South Sudan because, again, that they are buying right now are landing in the hands of wrong people. So those guns are the guns that they are going to kill innocent people.
Some of the other signs that are up here in front of the White House are IGAD has failed and too corrupt to bring peace to South Sudan. And protesters are also demanding the release of Dong Luk and Agri Idi, two political prisoners in South Sudan. Ayan Buer, VOA News, Washington.
We need peace in South Sudan now.
So South Sudan is now into its fifth year of conflict. United Nations agencies and several humanitarian groups have documented atrocities and possible war crimes committed by both government troops and rebels allied with rebel leader Riek Machar.
A court in Somaliland has sentenced a poet to 3 years in prison after charging her with insulting and defaming the state. The prosecutors say that while on a trip to Mogadishu early this year, Naima Ahmed Ibrahim advocated for unity with Somalia. Police arrested her in January after she returned from her trip. Somaliland, which formerly was the northwest part of Somalia, declared independence in 1991 after a war with Mogadishu's forces. Although no nation recognizes that declaration, Somaliland's government in Hargeisa operates separately from the Mogadishu government. The Somaliland Human Rights Center says it is very concerned about the conviction of and sentence. The group says freedom of expression is enshrined in the constitution and urged the government in Hargeisa to respect its own constitution. Ibrahim has advocated the idea of unifying all Somali communities in eastern Africa, just like those in northern Kenya.
In the Gambia, doctors have ended a month-long strike. The doctors were infuriated by the health minister's accusation that they stole drugs from health facilities to operate private pharmacies. VOA's Pandarian Bai reports.
A breakthrough has been reached in Gambia's month-long doctor strike. Dr. Ibrahim Abba is the president of Gambia's Association of Resident Doctors.
We have reached an agreement to restore full services in all public health facilities. This was made possible following a series of engagement with the government and reaching a favorable agreement with both parties binding.
In a joint statement signed by Gambia's Vice President Fatoumata Diallo Tambadjang and the doctors' representatives, the government promises to address some of the doctors' demands. For example, the government has promised to allocate $2 million to procure essential drugs and medical supplies through competitive international bidding. The delivery of relief medical services worth $500,000 from MedService through an aid group called Safe Hands for Girls also is part of the deal. Doctors had said that drugs and supply shortages were caused by failures at the Ministry of Health. For instance, they had claimed that no drugs had been imported into the country in more than a year, while X-ray machines and other equipment had broken down. Dr. Ibrahim Abba again.
As an association that is ready to ensure that the Gambian people get the health care that they deserve, we will not relent to continue the dialogue with all stakeholders and to ensure that the promises and assurances are fulfilled. We want to make it clear, again, we want to make it clear that the Ministry of Health will be held accountable from now on, and we will no longer remain silent and watch our innocent patients die.
The agreement also called for procuring $1 million worth of essential drugs and medical supplies through a World Bank project operated by the Gambian charity, the National Nutrition Agency, NANA. Part of the agreement also called for mobilizing aid from donor partners to help improve Gambia's health sector.
Therefore, in the light of the above, we have agreed to unanimously restore full clinical services in all public health facilities effective today, 14th April 2018. On that note, we pray that the great God of nations take us into a better Gambia where better healthcare services is not only for those who can afford it.
He says doctors realized the strike was bad for patients, but felt it was necessary to improve the system. The deal with the government omits one key demand from the doctors. They had called for the dismissal of Health Minister Safilo Sise. She remains in her position. For VOA Africa, this is Pandirim by reporting.
19 past the hour, you are listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Fighting terrorism is high on the agenda for the African Land Forces Summit, which begins today. Military leaders from across Africa and from the United States are gathered in Abuja for the week-long seminar. Nigerian Army Chief of Staff Lieutenant General T.Y. Buratai opened the gathering by saying that previous summits have enhanced security in Africa. He says the summits have helped African governments forge a common approach to combating cross-border threats. The commanders will focus on finding ways to improve their ability to coordinate operations against piracy, transnational crime, sectarian violence, and attacks from militant groups. This is the sixth African Land Forces gathering. Former U.S. President Barack Obama organized the first one in 2010, and since then, the summit has moved to a different African country each year.
Malawi has completed trials on a suitable variety of industrial hemp that can grow well. The aim is to find a substitute for the country's main cash crop, tobacco. It's in decline because of the anti-smoking program supported by the World Health Organization. But anti-drug groups fear the shift to hemp production will promote marijuana smoking among Malawians. Lamech Messina reports from Blantyre.
The trials started in 2015 after the Malawi Parliament approved a motion on the country's need to start growing industrial hemp. Nebat Nyilenda is the director at Invigro, a company tasked to carry out the trials.
Our trials were based on the understanding that we can take advantage of industrial hemp as a cash crop to help in employment creation, in foreign exchange generation, and in value addition in Malawi.
The trials were conducted at country's three agricultural research stations, Chitedze, Vumbwe, and Chitala. Nyirenda says they grew 10 various varieties, each with its own end use.
The varieties are meant for different products like the fiber, textile line of business, which is the apparel, so they will grow high up. Whereas for those that are needed for various oils and the pharmaceuticals, they can grow maybe as short as this, providing they give the flowers and the seed.
Meanwhile, the company has cultivated 8 hectares of hemp, expected to be harvested in June. However, anti-drug campaigners fear this will encourage young people to smoke cannabis. Nelson Zakeu is the executive director for the local NGO Drug Fight Malawi.
And the danger is that will just give an opportunity to young people to actually start consuming the local marijuana anyhow. That's the danger which we are fearing.
He says their records show that many people are now openly smoking marijuana since Parliament allowed the cultivation of industrial hemp, which is called chamba in the local language Chichewa. That name is also used for cannabis, so some young people believe the use of the plant has been legalized. In 2015, medical doctors at Zomba Mental Hospital confirmed receiving many cases of people who develop symptoms of mental conditions like mania from smoking hemp. But some scientists disagree with the diagnosis. They say industrial hemp has generally a very low content of tetrahydrocannabinol, or HTC, a substance that provides highs for those who smoke marijuana. Meet Yotam is a laboratory technician at Chitedze Agricultural Research Station in the capital, Lilongwe.
In the samples so far, I've found that the tetrahydrocannabinol and in this industrial hemp, it has shown that the drug is very, very minimal, almost negligible, because it ranges from 0.02 to 0.1.
Some marijuana plants can contain THC levels as high as 25%. The future of hemp cultivation will become known when the crops are evaluated. If the government determines hemp to be a viable crop for cultivation, then tobacco farmers may be recruited to grow it on a large scale, and officials will introduce proper regulations to prevent its misuse. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta.
criticism of the United States, Iran, and Israel was high on the agenda at the 29th annual Arab Summit. As Edward Reuranian reports from Cairo, leaders meeting in the Saudi town of Dhahran focused on the conflict in Yemen, the Syrian civil war, Libya's political and military divisions, as well as the U.S. decision to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel.
وفي الختام أعلن اختتام أعمال القمة العربية الثامنة والعشرين.
Jordan's King Abdullah gave a brief summary of the key issues facing the Arab region before handing over the official duties of presiding over the 29th annual summit to Saudi King Salman, who is hosting this year's event. Salman focused on Jerusalem, which is the top item on the summit agenda, as well as what he called Iranian meddling in the affairs of Arab states. He says that he holds what he calls the terrorist Houthi militia supported by Iran total responsibility for the suffering of the Yemeni people and urges the United Nations to condemn the Houthis for firing 119 missiles at Saudi cities, including the holy city of Mecca. Arab League head Ahmed Abul Ghait criticized the decision by U.S. President Donald Trump to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel, in addition to decrying the catastrophic situation in Syria.
شهدت قضياتنا المركزية فلسطين انتكاسة رئيسية أو هكذا أتصور.
He says that the central Arab cause of Palestine has witnessed a major setback after what he calls the illegal decision by the United States regarding Jerusalem as the capital of Israel and efforts to liquidate the Palestinian cause at the expense of the Palestinian people. The Palestinians, he complains, are themselves divided despite efforts to unite them. He also criticized the Syrian government for the collapse of the state and the catastrophic condition of the country, while decrying the hail of rockets, both foreign and local, over the heads of the Syrian people. Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi complained Arab states are facing unprecedented efforts to destroy their very existences and divide them as organic entities for the first time since their independence. Many state institutions, he asserts, are under threat, and several states have collapsed. Sisi went on to urge outside parties to stop meddling in the affairs of Arab states and to stop supporting terrorist organizations he argues are wreaking havoc in the Arab world. Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas insisted East Jerusalem will always remain the capital of a Palestinian state, while blasting Israel for its actions with regard to the international community. He says the international community has issued hundreds of resolutions at the UN regarding the situation in Palestine, but claims Israel has ignored every one of them, acting like a state above the law. Arab leaders avoided discussing the ongoing conflict between key Gulf states as well as Egypt with Qatar following a regional blockade against Doha last June after charges the tiny emirate supports terrorist groups in the region. Arab commentators noted the subject would be discussed behind closed doors rather than in public. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yais Wahib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Misha Dubinsky, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa,
Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari says he will seek his party's presidential ticket to contest elections in February 2019, ending months of speculation about his future. The future of 75-year-old Muhammadu Buhari on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.